Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Robert Mayer presiding.
Please be seated. First case to be argued this morning is number 2014-885. Columbus Schools Board of Education versus Franklin County Board of Revision. For the appellant, Mr. Gillis.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Mark Gillis on behalf of the Board of Education of the Columbus City Schools. To begin with, the Bedford Rule is not controlling in this case. That's because the Board of Education satisfied its burden under the Vandalia Standard, which stands for the proposition that a Board of Education can meet its burden of proof as the appellant before the BTA through cross-examination of the property owner's appraiser and through legal arguments and written briefs. In the Bedford case, the court held that the Bedford Rule was not rebutted because in that case, the Board of Education's evidence did not, quote, undermine the Board of Revision's decision, end quote. In Bedford, the Board of Education only challenged the property owner's appraiser's methodology of appraising the property by itself as opposed to a part of a larger economic unit. Once the court held or determined that the auditor likewise did not appraise it that way, the court held that the Board of Education didn't meet the Vandalia standard. And this was in line with the dissenting opinion from the BTA, which stated that the BOE failed to show that the auditor's value is any more indicative of true value than the decision of the Board of Revision. In this case, however, we have shown that the auditor's value is more indicative than the Board of Revision's decision because it was admitted and proven that the appraiser undervalued the property by using admittedly unstabilized income during the rent-up period. He merely averaged 2 years of income or NOI to arrive at his only method in the income approach. He stated in his report that they admitted that the vacancy rate was not stabilized. If the vacancy rate is not stabilized, that means the net operating income is likewise not stabilized and is too low. So the only thing we know is the property owner's appraiser undervalued the property. Therefore, it cannot be considered plausible evidence, which is reasonable or probable, which gets us to the North Point standard. In North Point, the court reiterated the Vandalia standard as a means for rebutting the Bedford Rule, but in that case held that the Board of Education didn't cross-examine the witness with regard to the probative nature of the evidence. In that case, the issue was the competency of the witness to testify in the first place. Once the court held that the witness was competent to testify as an owner, then the probative nature of the evidence hadn't been rebutted for cross-examination at the Board of Revision level. That's different in this case. We cross-examined the property owner's appraisal with regard to his methodologies, his lack of market data, and furthermore, there was actual cost information testimony given by the actual property owner. It's interesting in this case that the Board of Revision initially issued a decision essentially accepting the cost information, and then for some unknown reason, that decision was vacated in order to give the property owner another opportunity to present an appraisal.
When you're referring to the Vandalia-Butler case, you're referring to like the 2005 or 6 case.
The Timberlake case. If we want to refer to it as the Timberlake standard, that might be better because there are multiple Vandalia cases that tend to get confused.
And in that case, the court affirmed a decision of the BTA, correct, where the cross-examination had been effective in the eyes of the BTA.
That's correct. But now the BTA does.
But is there any case in which the court has invoking the idea of cross-examination or refuting by cross-examination actually reversed the BTA?
Not at this time, but there's a good reason for that. Up until this point, the BTA did a thorough analysis of the evidence and explained its reasoning in accepting or rejecting an appraisal. They no longer do that. As long as the appraisal has the right as of date stamped on it and an appraiser shows up and testifies, that's good enough. And then they simply defer to all of the subjective judgments that an appraiser makes. That's not the standard. An appraisal is supposed to be based upon objective market data. The only market data in this report was a collection of 10 sales that were not adjusted and were used to determine a capitalization rate. Now, there is a section in the report entitled Sales Comparison Approach, and there's a value there, but all that was a number plucked out of the air using the unadjusted comparable sales.
But again, as has been true in a number of other cases, there's a question here of whether or not this is merely a question of a factual determination and the weight that's being accorded to the evidence by the BTA to which the court defers, or whether this is somehow violates the basic legal principles. And it's your contention that the legal principles have been violated.
Well, the legal principles in changing valuation are set out in the statutes and the Constitution. The Constitution requires property to be taxed by uniform rule. The revised code implements the uniform rule and directs the tax commissioner to promulgate rules with regard to the valuation of real property. The Ohio Administrative Code states that a sales comparison approach is dependent upon the comparability of the sales to the subject property. Well, in this case, no adjustments were made. In fact, no descriptions of these comparables were given. They were merely listed in a chart. With regard to an income approach, the reliability of that is on the anticipated net income streams. The appraiser himself admitted that the income he used wasn't stabilized. Now, the court has said that the property owner, and we have to get back to the burden of the complainant in this case, before the Board of Revision, which tends to get glossed over if the BOR decides to reduce value, whether that's right or wrong. They have a burden to prove value at the Board of Revision level. This court has said that that's a heavy burden, and you have to present, or the best way to do that is a proper appraisal, which means there's such thing as a good appraisal and a bad appraisal. An appraisal that has no market data, an appraisal that admittedly uses unstabilized income, by definition undervalues the property. Therefore, that appraisal cannot be considered plausible because it's not reasonable or probable. It certainly can't be held to eclipse the auditor's value as a default simply because the BOR, which is also bound by those laws, unlawfully lowered the value. The purpose of the BTA is to do a de novo review of the evidence. They don't review anything other than the fact that an appraisal is in the record, and they can look at the cover page and see an as-of date and determine that an appraiser showed up. And then they defer to anything and everything that the appraiser did in the report. They don't even discuss it. This court can't tell what the property is, what the appraiser did in the appraisal. The BTA simply deems that it's in the record and there's nothing else, although in this case there is. There's direct testimony from the property owner himself about the costs of constructing this brand new apartment complex. So this goes way outside of that. But the bottom line here is the BTA does no analysis at all. They issue their decisions using double-sided paper. This came out on a single sheet of paper with boilerplate language that this court is reading in all of these appeals that they see. And the effective language accepting an appraisal boils down to one sentence. The appraisal in the record was as of tax lien date, was testified to by an expert, and was done for real estate tax purposes. Therefore, it's good. And there's no analysis whatsoever of any of the data that's in there, or in this case, the utter lack of market data. Now, what's interesting, and we submitted this as additional authority, is in a case where a Board of Revision rejects the property owner's appraisal, the BTA will go through all of the analysis it's supposed to. And that's the Best Ventures case that was just decided July 16th, 2015. And in that case, The Board of Revision rejected a report that didn't have any market data, and the BTA went through a thorough analysis and affirmed the Board of Revision and their rejection of that evidence. So it would appear now that the only time that the Board of Tax Appeals will do the analysis it's supposed to do in every case is if there's evidence that the Board of Revision rejected. If they accept it, then the BTA will blindly defer to them and essentially create a de facto presumption of validity of the Board of Revision's decision without any analysis, which is contrary to law. I'd reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. Mr. Bluestone.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner. My name is Charles Bluestone, Bluestone Law Group. I have the privilege of representing the property owner, appellee, in this matter. In evaluating a situation, one's perspective, according to common parlance, can be influenced by how one sees the situation, whether it's a glass half full or a glass half empty. Here, what's unique about this case is that the appraisal report prepared by MAI appraiser James Horner opined to two valuations, one for tax year 2005 and the other for tax year 2008. The same methodology was used by Mr. Horner in arriving at his value conclusions for the two separate tax years, as acknowledged by the appellant in its brief. It's interesting that the appellant accepts Mr. Horner's valuation conclusion for 2008, using the methodology that we just heard Mr. Gillis complain of. For 2005, Mr. Horner and Mr. Kelly and Deborah Pizarro, who was an employee of Oakwood Management, testified to the fact that Oakwood Management is the largest residential property management firm in Central Ohio. They typically manage between 9 and 10,000 residential apartments here in the Columbus area. If last time I looked at Business First Book of Lists, if you took the number of apartments managed by the second and third largest property management firms, they wouldn't even equal what Oakwood Management has under management. And Ms. Pizarro testified that every month her and her staff go out and do a market survey of rents charged by their competitors, and they also compared the rents being charged at the subject property, which is called Albany Commons, to other properties in their portfolio. And that's how they established the market, what the rent should be for this apartment complex. Mr. Horner had that information, had discussions with them, looked at the market surveys. He testified at the Board of Revision level that Oakwood Management is a well-regarded, well-run property management firm, and therefore he accepted the rents being charged by Albany Commons and the expenses that were incurred by Albany Commons as being reflective of market rates, both for income and expenses. The Board of Revision did hold two hearings. Why they opened up the case after the first decision, I don't know. There was no contact between our firm and the Board of Revision, but they decided to take additional evidence, and they did vacate the first decision within the 30 days, and therefore they acted within their jurisdiction. There was a second hearing. There was a third hearing actually held at the Board of Tax Appeals, and Mr. Kelly testified there as well as to the operation of the subject apartment complex. And I would point out that nowhere in what is now 10-year litigation history for this case has the Board of Education either done the following things: had its own appraisal evidence submitted, they had an opportunity to subpoena Mr. Horner's books and records if they wanted to see the additional data that was contained within his files, and in fact, as we all know, the Board of Education frequently subpoenas appraisal witnesses and asked to see the data that isn't directly reflected in their appraisal reports. I take issue with Mr. Gillis's qualification of the procedures now being enacted by the Board of Tax Appeals. I think that the Board of Tax Appeals reviewed the record, looked at the appraisal report, determined that Mr. Horner had expressed an opinion of value as of the tax lien date, that it was the report was prepared for tax valuation purposes. It was attested to by a qualified expert, and the BTA determined that his report was competent, probative, reasonable, and well-supported. They did the job that they're supposed to do. There was some testimony as to construction costs at the Board of Revision level as well as at the BTA level, but those were approximate figures given by the property owner's representative. The school board never subpoenaed the actual expenses to construct the project. And there is some criticism in the appellant's brief that the appraiser didn't use the cost methodology for appraising the subject property. And as we pointed out in our reply, this is a complex which is 20 residential buildings constructed from 2000 to late 2004. As each building was completed, tenants moved in, and it would be difficult to make all of the depreciation adjustments for a complex that has 20 residential apartment buildings plus detached garages plus the clubhouse and other features. And that's why Mr. Horner did not utilize the cost approach. And he also explained that the most typical buyers would not use the sales comparison approach, but would rely instead on the income capitalization approach. Mr. Gillis has stated today, and also in the briefs, that Mr. Horner did not use a stabilized income in doing his analysis. And as we pointed out, at the beginning of 2005, January 1st, 2005, the apartment complex was 85% occupied. And 3 years later, December 31st of 2007, the occupancy went up to 88.5%. A total of 8 more units were leased up. It's important to remember that as of the tax lien date in question, January 1st, 2005, the market was booming. The single-family residential home and the condo markets here in Central Ohio were booming. Banks were making loans to anybody who applied. And apartments were then suffering from a higher vacancy level. So it's not unreasonable that January 1st, 2005, there was a 15% vacancy rate. And only when we get to the recession, which begins in 2007, 2008, 2009, with foreclosure acts coming down on homeowners' head, occupancy rates going up to the current 95 and higher rates. Yes, it is a short decision from the BTA, but I think that you would agree, and the court would agree, that the length of a decision doesn't prejudge its validity. We think that the Board of Tax Appeals' decision in this case was reasonable and lawful. That's the standard that this court is to apply in evaluating the BTA's decision. And we ask that the decision be sustained. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bluestone. Mr. Gillis, you've reserved 4 minutes and 56 seconds.
More time than usual. In this court's recent decision in Navistar and the 10th District Court of Appeals' recent decision in Bank Street Partners, those holdings result in a doctrine that if the BTA's refusal to both independently consider and weigh all of the conflicting evidence, in this case, the testimony and report of the appraiser and the cross-examination and answers elicited therefrom, and the BTA's decision must include the critical analysis of that testimony and evidence, renders the decision unreasonable and lawful. The 10th District in Bank Street Partners also reiterated the axiom that if the BTA is silent on material evidence, then the appellate court is unable to do its job. Mr. Bluestone confuses, when he's talking about the actual report, actual rents and net operating income. Mr. Horner did not accept actual rents in his report because that would be gross income. He simply averaged the net operating income for 2004 and 2005 and in his report specifically stated that he acknowledges that the vacancy for 2004 was above market. If the vacancy is higher than market, then the net operating income is below market. It is an admission in the report that he undervalued the property. And Mr. Bluestone seems to think or argue that because we didn't appeal the 2008 decision, that somehow that prejudices our appeal of the 2005 decision. The fact of the matter is that he used different NOIs in his analysis after the property had been stabilized according to its income and expenses. So they bear no relationship to each other. What's interesting is that a property 3 years later, according to Mr. Horner, increased in value by more than 20%. But the rents are the same. So what's the difference? They rented more units. The 60 units that came online that were empty were finally rented, and they became stabilized. And that's what the BTA held in the Best Ventures was the reason for rejecting the appraisal. The sole difference here is that the BOR accepted it, so the BTA will simply accept whatever the Board of Revision did. Otherwise, they would include the very same analysis of the report that they did in Best Ventures in this case. But they didn't.
You're seeking a reversal in this case, or a remand, or?
Well, I think that the court can reverse the decision and find other evidence in the record, like the cost information that was testified to. Now, Mr. Bluestone says that we didn't subpoena that. Well, a thorough review of this record will indicate that we asked for it a number of times in discovery. Mr. Bluestone was sanctioned for failing to provide the initial discovery and admits in that sanctions hearing that the cost information still had not been provided and never was. So the withholding of evidence is now, according to Mr. Bluestone, being used against us for not bringing it in. It must be remembered that a complainant at the Board of Revision has an initial heavy burden of proof, according to this court. And if they don't meet it, it doesn't matter what the Board of Revision did. The BTA is supposed to independently weigh the evidence and make that determination. And simply put, they didn't do that in this case. So the court can either reverse and find the other information in the record and determine value, or reverse and remand with instructions that the Board of Tax Appeals independently weigh all of the evidence in light of its own precedent and independently determine value. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gillis. This case will be submitted, and the court will advise the parties of its decision.